Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Flourish.
And welcome to Fansplaining, the podcast by, for, and about fandom.
Episodes 22A and 22B. This is just 22A. I made this really complicated for everyone, including myself. This is our first two-part episode. We have had one double episode, but we made that one big long thing, but we thought this time we would experiment with splitting it in two, just to make it a little more approachable, I guess. I got some feedback on the other one, basically. So, from a couple of people who were like, oh, it just seemed too long, even though people seem to enjoy it. That's episode 17, by the way, The Powers That Be. Plugging
right.
her
and
archive.
This episode.
But this one, right. This one, focus on the now. 22A and B, race and fandom.
And it does what it says on the tin. So the way that this episode came about was our regular contributor, Toast, did a series of posts about statistics, as she does, talking about Star Wars and how Finn and Poe were a very popular pairing at first, and then their popularity has decreased, at least comparatively, I think absolutely also, while Kylox has become more and more popular since The Force Awakens came out.
Okay, wait, more specifics. She's talking about AO3 and Tumblr.
Correct.
It's fan fiction and what gets tagged on Tumblr in terms of content. And as we discussed, Tumblr isn't great at tagging, but, you know, it's logical to assume that everyone is proportionally bad at tagging on Tumblr. So,
right. And you've got a ship. AO3 doesn't, like, cover all fan fiction, and she tried to account for that. But,
exactly.
But the point is that the trends were disturbing. You can't look at those stats without being like, there is a race thing happening here.
Wait. Also, I don't think we explained who Kylox was, because if that doesn't make sense to you, it's probably because you don't even remember General Hux. Because
the space Nazi.
He, played by Donald Gleason, has like five lines and has shiny boots. My favorite meme about him was that he looks like he's watching you not use a coaster. And that is the permanent look on his face. So
when we had Toast on to talk about these stats.
Somehow, okay, I'm just contextualizing who General Hux is, because if you're not in Star Wars, you may literally have no idea who we're talking about, but you probably know who Finn is. He is the male lead. He is a black man, played by John Boyega. Poe is Oscar Isaac, and Rey is the female lead. We're not even talking about her, are we?
No, basically not at all.
Anyway, Star Wars. Okay, so, you know, the first thing you think when you look at this, and the first thing a lot of people think is, okay, that there's some racism going on here, whether it's explicit or implicit, and, you
right.
know, whatever the, if that makes a difference, the outcome is the same.
Right.
People
but
are,
as we started talking
yeah.
about it with Toast, we realized that this is podcasting, so you can't see us, but I am white. Elizabeth is white, Toast is white, and we were about to be three white women pontificating about race, and that's not a good look. So
no.
We decided that we wanted to devote some actual time to inviting people of color to talk about this issue, to reaching out to people of color and interviewing them about it, and basically to not be white women pontificating about race, but instead to provide a platform for other people to talk about this issue.
Right. And, you know, have you heard the last episode we asked specifically about this? And this is, you know, I spent a lot of time with the audio as I've edited it over the last few days. I think this was said, but people talk about this. This is a microcosm or, a very illustrative example of broader trends in fandom. The privileging of white guys, frankly, we'll be talking a little bit about gender will come into this, but it's definitely the privileging of white characters over mm-hmm. characters of color. And this is a movie with characters of color in the lead, and somehow they don't get to be in the lead in fandom's mind. And like, right. what's going on here, basically, is a question that we want to explore.
Right. And this was all underlined by the fact that coincidentally, at about the same time as Destination Toast posted her stats, there came out a meta by Franzeska, which covered issues of race and gender in fandom, but really got talked about because of the way that it handled race, which a lot of people found very problematic. And we're going to link to the meta and to a lot of responses to it in the show notes, but we wanted to call it out because it hit at just the right time to be tied up in this conversation and to be a major issue.
This became part of the discourse. Yeah, I mean, the basic way to say it is like, it's discussing preference. So, you know, if you're working from a point of saying fandom privilege, fandom, and I mean, this is such a, like, obviously we spent a lot of time talking about what is fandom. We're talking about transformative fandom, female-dominated, fanfiction-y kind of fandom. And obviously, you see parallels in other corners of fandom or media consumption or society at large. But this is who we're talking about. You're talking about preference, saying, if you always go for the white guys, like, oh, you know, like, there's a lot of ways you can excuse it, right? Or you can attempt to excuse it. And so that's basically what I was going at. And there were a lot of problems. And some of our guests are going to be talking about this, but this has been a huge part of this discourse. So if you haven't read it, you obviously don't have to, but I think, will we link to it?
Yeah, go to the show notes. I think it's important for everybody to read to have context.
If you want to engage with this, but absolutely, I would say if you don't want to, there's absolutely no reason why you should. And I would say that about any meta or any point of discourse. don't, if you think it's going to make you mad, you can also just skip it. So, and we'll, you know, we'll be linking to a bunch of commentary that our guests have provided for us. Right. So I think that's probably all the context that our listeners need if they haven't been deep in this discussion in the last few weeks. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I agree. So just a couple of notes about format. We put out a call and we got so many respondents that we really wanted to take everybody, and we have. So that's part of why this is going to be a double episode.
Just as an aside, sometimes we kind of beat ourselves up over like trying to keep things to like an hour. These two, because we didn't want to have to cut anyone out or really, really edit anyone down significantly. These two are a little over an hour, perhaps a bit more than an hour. And I would kind of love to know, not about this in particular, but in general, like if anyone has any feelings about length, if you see like an hour 10 and you're like, no, I can't do that in my life. If that makes a difference to you, I get the sense that most of our listeners listen when they can, you know, maybe listen when they're interested in the topic and won't say no. Yeah. I'm only thinking about this too because I'm producing a podcast professionally and we're constantly talking about like how it needs to be less than half an hour and developers have limited time. So like maybe I'm letting this infect it and maybe this is not an issue. So anyway.
Right. But let us know your thoughts on how long fansplaining should be because we're obviously still experimenting with format.
Yes. Yes. That's what I was trying to say.
Right. And with the note of experimenting with format, just so that you know what to prepare for this episode, part one, we're going to have five contributors. Two of them we're going to interview, and three of them have prepared statements that we're going to play. So first, we're going to hear from Holly Quinn. She prepared a statement. Then we're going to interview Rukmini Pandey. Then we're going to hear from Shadowkeeper with a prepared statement. Then Cleo will interview. And then PJ Poonla will roll her statement.
We'll introduce the other five contributors in the next episode. What you need to know about these prepared statements is we basically, to the group of six, we gave them a series of kind of broad questions. And the one great thing about Holly Quinn going first is she pretty clearly states the question that we asked and then gives an answer. So you'll know immediately what those questions were. They're basically about like broad perceptions of race and fandom and also how that affects our respondents personally. Do you think they need to know anything else?
I think that that's good. So why don't we hear from Holly?
Awesome.
Hi, my name's Holly Quinn. I run the blog Diverse High Fantasy on Tumblr. My fandoms include Star Wars, The Walking Dead, and Killjoys. And most of my fan writing is representation and media commentary. Do you see racism underlying fandoms' pairing preferences? Absolutely, there's no question about it. With fandom, the kind of racism that you most commonly see isn't things like racial slurs and hate speech and white hoods. What you really see is a constant communal prioritization of white people and white characters, even when there are non-white characters in major roles. This is a trend across almost all fandoms. There are very few exceptions. How have fandom's attitudes on race affected you personally? I'm affected by it every day. I see it every day, every time that I go onto Tumblr, every time I enter a fan space, and it's had a lot of impact on me in that fandom has made me more aware that racism is really that ubiquitous, even among people who consider themselves progressive, and that a lot of people, even in the U.S., are actually, I think, really isolated from people of color, especially black people. How have fandom's attitudes changed in the time that you've been involved in fandom? I've been in online fandom since the 90s. The changes that I've seen in fandom as far as race really have more to do with the increase in black voices in fandom than any real overall changes in attitude. I do think there's more white fans who are interested in black characters or characters of color simply because there are more of them. But I think overall the patterns are the same. You see the same comments, the same discourse, the same everything. You know, I can see the same comments being made about Michonne today that you would see 20 years ago. Really not a lot of change. I think the things that have had the biggest impact on increasing diversity in fandom have been the birth of social media, the fandom migration to Tumblr as a major platform, and the premiere of Sleepy Hollow, which, as you know, is a U.S. genre show with a black woman lead. As much as there were failures with that show, it created a fandom where a black woman was in the top ship on AO3. There's a special tag where fans could have an ongoing discussion on race with minimal opposition. And it's just a very different space. And I think that more diverse fan culture has spread to other fandoms. What constructive steps can fans take to improve the situation? I think for fans of color, when you see racist patterns, you have to say something. You have to speak up, reblog when other people are talking about it, or, you know, just say something yourself. And don't be afraid to use words like racist and racism. I know when I use those words, people get really defensive. They'll act like I'm being extreme, or act like I'm over the top and out of line. And to me, that's really just people refusing to discuss issues that we're seeing in terms of race and just running away. So for white fans, I would say don't run away. Don't try to avoid the conversation. Listen.
All right, so that was Holly, and our next guest is an interview, and it's Rukmini Pandey. She's from India. She's currently finishing her PhD on race and fandom, and she's been around fandom since 2003. She's currently mostly into Star Wars, but Sam Wilson is also her fave. So shall we welcome Rukmini?
Let's call her up. Hi.
Hello. Thanks so much for coming on.
All the way across the time difference.
So we're really excited to talk to you. So you've been in fandom a long time, right?
I have, yes. I have been in fandom since I was 18. I'm now 30, so it's been a while. You know, I've moved between anime fandoms to more Western-centric fandoms, I suppose. So, of course, that's a pretty random line to draw. And yeah, so I've been here a long time. I've been watching fandom and, you know, engaging with it and making friends and, you know, all of that. So it's been a ride. So,
yeah.
I think what is my issue with a lot of the ways this conversation is framed is that we keep seeming to be set back to zero. We keep seeming to have these conversations. Race fail happened. The treatment of Uhura happened. The arguments continue to be the same. We seem to keep repeating ourselves. And that's tiring and not very productive. Yeah. And also, I think it's this continual framing, I think. And I was talking about it today on Twitter as well. Let me tell you about the history of fandom. You know, this very condescending and completely, like, pretending to be historical, but rather a historical look at what the archive of our own is, what Slash is, you know, what kind of conversations have been happening, to frame it as historical and not talk about all those times when these conversations have happened and have been happening, you know, not with outsiders who have suddenly decided, you know, to rip apart somebody's, you know, safe space, but as people who have, you know, who've squeed, who've run challenges, who've written fic, who've contributed, who have, I suppose, in a sense, bought in to the narrative that these are spaces where we talk back to culture,
right,
to craft all these narratives, and then to be told that you are, you know, you're just ruining everybody's fun to score social justice points is just, it's deeply hurtful and it's deeply alienating, you know, and again, we're set back to zero. We have to start all over again with the justification of why we're here. When were we here? How long have we been here? What have we been writing? What have we been reading? You know, it's that position of feminist killjoys, I suppose, once again, you know, mm-hmm. Like you talk about it, you're the problem. You know, everybody else is having fun. I think that's my take on this cyclical thing that just keeps happening. And you see patterns that have always been present, but you perhaps, you know, looked at, like I said, you know, you look at them through the corner of your eye because you know the minute you look at it, you know, you'll never be able to unsee it. And I think these people who are finding communities that talk the same kind of, you know, who value characters from different backgrounds and who legitimize the squee in a way. You're not being random when Finn is important to you. You're not asking for something that is not valid. Now, for a lot of perhaps people who've been sailing along in their, you know, particular experiences of fandom are saying, well, this was never a problem earlier. I don't see why you guys are coming in and taking over our spaces and spoiling our fun. And I'm like, we're not spoiling anyone's fun. I don't see how saying, hey, like, Finn is a great character. I know you like these characters because I've read the fics that build these characters up, even when there isn't, we're not unfamiliar with the tropes. We're not unfamiliar with the traditions. We're not unfamiliar with trash ships or whatever. I am not somebody who is, you know, oh, I will only read, you know, PG-13 fluff. You know, like, it's not about that. This consistent characterization of fans who talk about these things as somehow kink negative or slash negative or, you know, or somebody who's like, you know, we'll only read these kinds of stories is ridiculous. Like, the smugness of the, oh, I, you know, I read all these, you know, very edgy fics while you want to be, you know, safe in your little cocoons of, you know, unproblematicness. I'm like, this is not true. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. And everybody comes up to me and is like, but it's so difficult. It's so difficult. I'm like, why is it so difficult? Like, did fandom suddenly change and hate all fluff? Because, you know, after the whole, like, you know, not to pin this on particular ships, but the, you know, the fact that, you know, there was this pushback about, oh, Kylux is so popular because it allows us to do all this, you know, edgy stuff. And I'm like, okay. And I went to the AO3 and I was like, I've never been on this tag. Let me see what's happening. And I literally went through, I clicked on, you know, the additional tag. The first additional tag that comes up is fluff.
Yeah.
You know, I went down the whole first page and I picked out the relevant tags and it was, you know, arranged marriage, Ben Solo is a smuggler, soulmate AU, kissing in the bleachers, fluff.
Yeah.
There was one non-con. Okay, I'll give that.
But if it's forced marriage non-con, that's not exactly, you know, innovative.
It's not anything that is radically different to right. What is coming out of other fandoms. Like, this whole idea of, you know, somehow, you know, the freedom, you know, is that Kylux gives over Finn Poe seems to me to be a complete red herring. I don't see it. I've seen, as I said, I've seen half my fandom life would not have been tripping over fluff where I did not want it. if fandoms weren't built on it. And, you know, if, you know, I've been here, I've trawled tags, I've tried to find fic that I want to read, and you can't tell me that suddenly fandom has now decided that fluff is just not an option. Yeah. It's not fair, you know, and it's not fair to bracket people who are talking about these problems as somehow, you know, not participating in this, you know, as I said, in this Spanish currency of love and of squee and of support, because we've run chromatic character challenges. We boost fic. We love art. There are entire blogs that are, you know, so many blogs that are built around joy and making characters interesting and celebrating them. And isn't that what fandom is supposed to be?
Sure.
Isn't that what we've built stuff like AO3 on? It's a mischaracterization. Yeah. Oh, you just want to score points. Why would I want to score points? I just want fic.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about the cycles of like Flashpoint versus like the everyday happenings. Does that make sense? So like, I think it's interesting that, but you have like a bunch of white fans who like never ever think about race and like who only think about white characters and don't, you know, just have this total like systemic racist blind spot to characters of color. And then there is a Flashpoint, and then that's the one moment that they have to think about it, and that's why they get so defensive. Do you know this cycle? I'm not sure. This isn't a question. I'm just trying to like formulate.
Flashpoint idea is really interesting because I think that we're going to get more of them just in terms of the fact that the media is getting better. Like, I've always had this thing about when people say, you know, media fandom as the space that we keep making more space for more stories for, you know, all of these ideas. And I think that for the first time, and this is why I think a lot of people that usually don't, you know, take notice of this, The Force Awakens is perhaps the first text where there is literally no wriggle room on this argument. There isn't. I did not expect this movie. I did not expect to see what I did. I walked in. I avoided spoilers for 2 months because I was moving countries and I couldn't get to a movie theater, and I literally went off the internet for 2 months, and I just did not. I was like, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. And everybody was like, oh my god, like Rukmini, it's amazing, it's amazing. I'm like, it couldn't be. It's J.J. Abrams. No, you don't understand. It's amazing. And I walked out of there with this, you know, it was this, you know, the fact that I saw Finn take off his helmet and, you know, that was him. And Poe was Poe and Rey was Rey. And these character types that I've loved all my life had just suddenly expanded. Mm-hmm. I genuinely walked out of that theater thinking that this was it. This was the tipping point. This combination was going to be impossible to ignore because it's perfect.
Right.
And, you know, and since, of course, you know, it didn't happen. I hope at least that Aztecs get better with representation, fandom will stop having the same excuses that it's always had. It's very interesting that this is not something that fandom has made room for. It's what the texts are forcing onto fandom. And I think that's just talking from my own point of view as a fan studies person as well. Like, not just as a fan, but also as a fan studies person. I think that it's going to, I hope it really does force a reconsideration of what these texts, you know, what fans do with what they get, which has been a little one note so far.
That is such an interesting distinction and so different than, so I'm a slash person, right? And I have been for a long time. And I was going to say, as an aside, one thing that I really love about the Star Wars conversation is it's not like the Spock Uhura Kirk conversation, because that is also a het ship versus a slash ship, and it's hard to be like, to, there's two things happening at once, whereas this is like, we're talking,
and Spock has his own complications with regard to race and the way people have historically read him and so forth. There's just so much going on,
whereas this was like two men of color versus two white dudes. You know, obviously there's a big het ship in the middle of this too, and like, but you know,
yes,
about that.
Yes,
but
yes.
But they don't even have to be, what's funny is the men of color and the two white dudes don't even have to be mutually exclusive, and yet that has become the discussion.
I know,
of,
it like, could just be there,
people
yeah.
People not wanting Finn Poe over
right.
Kylux. Like, you're like, you know, these could be two great tastes that taste great together if you really wanted them to be. But and it seems like Finn Poe shippers do, because Kylux shows up in Finn Poe fic.
It's interesting because I think that
one of the things I really value about Slash, and Slash has tons of problems, and someday we're going to actually sit down and have a Slash episode. But one thing I really value about Slash is it doesn't wait for anything, and it just makes the text, like, queries the text immediately, right? It's not waiting for the content creators to catch up, and often doesn't care about that. And I think it's pretty telling that I think because of white people's just, you know, I don't know what, if it's discomfort or underlying racism or whatever, but I've never, you know, I shouldn't say never, because I think that erases, there's plenty of people doing plenty of work, right? But like the fact that it has to come from the content creators first makes me sad, right? Because one thing, I'm a very fuck canon kind of person, and I'm like, I love Slash because we're like, I'm not going to wait for you, fuck you, they're gay, right? You know, and it's sad that we have to wait for the people that we're supposed to be kind of fixing to come in and say, like, now you can't ignore it anymore. Does that, you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I've been saying this for a while, actually, in the sense that I think Star Wars proves it. I think Star Wars proves that, and this is something that I want to say, you know, in my own work, that whiteness is a structuring force in fandom. That's what it is. It's something that we don't want to talk about because it goes directly against everything we love about the space. But you cannot have it both ways. You cannot say that this is a space that talks back to culture. This is a space that resists narratives. This is a space that allows for all these exploration of identities. And in 70 plus years of writing, we haven't had one juggernaut, not one. It's unavoidable. And it literally took a J.J. Abrams directed movie,
Disney owned,
to bring us to the point where I can say that Poe and Finn are absolutely the archetypes that gives me the backing to say these things. And I think that needs a reconsideration. I think that, you know, it's telling to be, and even now, like, and that's not just in terms of, you know, Slash. I think Slash gets it more because, again, this is the space where we're supposed to be, you know, which has been built up as this kind of resistant space. But I think that there's an equally interesting conversation to be had about Finn and Rey, and particularly about Finn, because Finn is this, he is unavoidable. He's right there. Mm-hmm. He is unavoidable in every conversation you have on Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because he is right there. And he is not allowing any kind of sweeping under the carpet. And I think that that's very key. It's a particular combination of character, of actor, and of plot, and of film. Of the, you know, it is the Star Wars franchise. Right. It means things. You know, it's tapping into a whole bunch of nostalgia. It's tapping into a whole bunch of archetypes about what a hero is and what, you know, and what we love. And, you know, as I said, what happened when Finn took off his helmet? You know, it just, he's just standing there right in the center of all of this. And for once, fandom can't ignore him. They can't. They're going to have to deal with him in some way.
Right.
And how they're dealing with him in both Het and Slash, because I think we're, you know, they're quite connected now as spaces. Like, we're not, you know, the fan continuum is quite, you know, and even in FemSlash, like my friends in Fem who've kind of been in FemSlash communities, Finn is so important there. And one of my friends very funnily once said that, you know, usually our reaction to boys is like, ew, boys, why are boys here? And she was like, within those spaces, Finn, you know, the great Piradi fic, have you heard? That fic is being, you know, is being passed around. Finn is being seen as, you know, as this important moment, this important character.
Right.
You know, I think Finn's blackness is huge in all of this. I think if he was any other type of character, if he had any other racial background, it probably wouldn't be this flashpoint. It goes, you know, straight to the heart of these insecurities and kind of just lays it open.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that is so interesting.
Yeah, I do think that the Het space is actually, it's funny because you were talking about the complexity and the perfectness of the archetypes. And I think that actually Sleepy Hollow on a smaller scale is more the good comparison for the Het space of like, look, here you have the dueling partners. It's clear that they are the ones that should be shipped in this if you're a Het person. And I think Star Wars is a little more complicated than that. because of the attractiveness of the, you know, dark fuck prince sort of Kylo Ren, you know, space, and the fact that there is so much blowback on Reylo to the point where the top Reylo fic is a Reylo is bad and wrong. Like, that is actually a space where I don't think incest is a real thing, and
Kylo Ren should be thrown in the garbage.
Right. I mean, like, I'm not saying it's not a trash ship, and so, you know, but it is different. Like, the top fic in Kylux is not saying Kylux is wrong and space Nazis. You know what I mean?
I think you're right in the sense that in the headspace there is, you know, there is a more of a conversation perhaps to be had. But I do think that Finn, again, is very much a part of the, like, if John Boyega was playing Kylo Ren and if Adam Driver was playing Finn.
That's true. Never.
I don't think anybody can argue with me about the fact that everybody would be like, it's racist. We can't ship her with her, Star Wars is racist for having cast Kylo like that, and we can't go there.
Right. It's true.
Like, people who are now saying, like, oh, you know, he's a complicated moral character, would be just like, no, he's evil, I'm not going to touch him, you know?
Exactly.
If we're waiting for Hollywood to give cues on this, it's so complicated because they're probably going to hesitate to cast, they're not going to want to cast a black man in the role of, like, dictator of the space Nazis or whatever, but like it's interesting for everyone saying, oh well, I just want to write about dark characters, you know, like dark fuck princes or whatever, or, you know, tortured sad man babies. So if we need more like tortured sad man babies of color and to see, and if then they get completely ignored, you know?
Exactly.
John Boyega was also literally a storm, like, Finn is a stormtrooper, so it's not like he wasn't part of the evil space.
He's a good guy, sweetie, though. You
know? Exactly. Like, if one wants to talk about character archetypes and how they're treated, you want to talk about PTSD?
Mm-hmm.
Bucky's PTSD seems to be very, very popular as a fic trope.
Sure.
So I don't know why suddenly Finn's pain, which parallels that a lot, you know, the whole idea of being brainwashed, the idea of being, you know, of refusing to kill, the idea of, you know, it's this whole idea. Absolutely. Of plugs into this idea of black people don't feel pain, they're just too strong, he's just inherently good, he's too good. And I'm like, there's a lot to be unpacked in all the years that he was, you know, he was put in that particular position. There's a huge amount of, you know, of interest. And historically, fandom has been very interested to see how that works.
For sure.
I mean, within my experience of the Star Wars fandom, I don't think I saw anyone say, please never touch Finn. Please never make him into, you know, never explore his pain. You know, this whole idea of, oh, like, you know, social justice warriors are all up in our, you know, face. I never saw that. I was in those spaces. I follow blogs that, you know, say, you know, this is a particularly gross trope. Maybe, you know, we should think about how we're, you know, using this. But I never saw people. I saw, in fact, people being like, let's talk about his pain. Let's talk about how, you know, he experienced that. Let's talk about what could have happened. Let's talk about his relationships, you know, within the First Order. And in fact, there was a genre of fic that did that really well. You know, the whole idea of, you know, F2187 was a stormtrooper and he rebelled. And that's important. And that led to a great genre of fics. Mm. There's no reason for that to not be as much of a generator of fic than the darkness of Kylo Ren.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For whatever, you know, reason. And again, if we flipped those roles, it would not have happened the same way. The dynamic between Kylo Ren and Rey would not have been read in the same way. You can do that with, you know, if you flipped it again, if Oscar Isaac and John Boyega were playing Kylo Ren and General Hux, nobody would have had the slightest interest in a trash ship.
Sure.
Trash.
Yeah, those were air quotes. I'm also skeptical about this.
We just spent all of last episode, you know, discussing whether this was a thing. So,
I think to broaden the conversation is really important because this makes it really clear. But these tropes have been, you know, these patterns have been seen, you know, again and again and again. We've seen it a lot. We've seen, you know, everybody is like, oh, we're really interested in characters like that do stupid things and, you know, screw up their relationships and all of that. And I'm like, yes, yes, so am I. I am in this space. I also love these, I love these tropes. But when it, you know, in The Losers, when Idris Elba's character, you know, completely screws up and completely, you know, betrays his friends and everybody's like, why did you do this? And him and Jeffrey Dean Morgan's character was, had such a, you know, like they were, it was right there. It was, and nobody was particularly interested in, you know, and I think that it is the interiority that is granted to white crime and to white evil that is just not granted to anyone else. Mm-hmm. Sure, you might like villains, you might like dark characters, but the whiteness of those dark characters is very key to why you feel you can explore them.
Definitely.
Sure. That's incredibly insightful.
Yeah.
That's really, I've never heard anybody say, make specifically that connection before, maybe just because I haven't been reading enough, and that's incredibly insightful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people were coming up to me and being like, oh, like you, but it's so, like, A, not every fic that comes out of fandom and is usually kudosed is, you know, edgy and dark and, you know, treading on 100 tropes. Please miss me with that because it's, I've been here. You know, I think one of the highest kudosed fics in Hannibal fandom is a coffee shop AU. So, you know, it's not.
Oh God, Hannibal fandom is like, it's Flower Crown fandom, right? Like, there's nothing but that.
You know, there
I own and love my Flower Crown, but my God, it is not about actually exploring evil. It is about how hot Mads Mikkelsen is and how much of a whoobie he is.
Yes. Like, it is this whole idea of being able to explore problematic characters when their humanity is not questioned. Their humanity is always there. Their humanity is always right there that can be unearthed through this exploration. But if you're not going to grant that level of interiority to problematic characters that are played by non-white people, then you're never going to get there. And you're always going to be able to pass it on to something else. You know, that's what makes me mad because it becomes, you know, this constant idea of, oh, let me tell you that I only like this. And I'm like, okay, maybe you do. But, you know, fandom at large certainly does not. If problematic characters are your jam, then why should it be so difficult for you to explore the problematicness of somebody who seems to be written as a racist character? Mm-hmm. We cross all kinds of boundaries, right? In fan fiction, like that's what we fly our flags about. We say, you know, we do all kinds of, to go back to trash things, we do the, you know, we do age differences, we do you know, we Flourish. Do you know, we do power differentials, we sure. do we do all kinds of things. So yeah. why does yeah. suddenly this particular, and you get people up, you know, accusing you of all kinds of things in various, you know, like
if you're willing to go to the mat for Raylo, then you should be willing to go to the sure. mat for problematic representations of Finn that are like trying to get it.
Well,
something.
I also think as a parallel, like if you're going to blame the source material and the writing and say like, oh, well, I'm not going to go there because this is a racist, one-dimensional character, but every single day people in fandom are rewriting women to make them complex and not sexist, like the, you know, and it's like,
absolutely.
And this is like a mission, right? You know, like I, like this is what I try to like make all the women actually have dimensions in my stories, you know? So again,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a really interesting point in these conversations because you can't have it both ways. You can't keep telling, you know, yourselves and everyone else around you that this is a space where you come to expand storylines and to push back against toxic cultural messages. And at the same time, maintain that this is a line too far, that this is somehow not something that is within your control, because there is no reason, you know, and especially since it kind of also sets up this weird, you know, kind of thing where, you know, your identity is kind of, you know, sectioned off into men of color are queer.
Yeah.
They're not, this is why these spaces have been some so important to us, because this is as much our space as anyone else's. This is where we come to relax as well. To make it into a, into, you know, an us versus them thing, or a, you know, or you, we just want to relax and you're, you know, being such dickheads about it. You know, it's not, you know, it gets really tiring when it's framed like that.
I am incredibly sad to say, I think we are running out of time, but will you promise us to come back and talk to us again, like, about whatever you want, but like, or all of this again, because it was just so fantastic talking to you. Yeah,
for sure. I would very much love to keep talking to whoever would like to keep talking to me. Sometimes I'm just like, nobody will want to talk to me anymore. Very soon, they'll be just like,
that is not true.
There's two people who would still like to talk to you in future times. So,
no, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a great conversation, and I hope that, you know, the rest and, you know, your other interviews sound great as well. So,
yay. Awesome. Thank you
for joining us.
You know, that was such a great conversation.
I feel like she put her finger on things that I think people have tried to say to me before and I did not get.
That was kind of a mixed like metaphor image. She put her finger on things people have tried to say to you.
But I didn't get them before. I mean, I'm being honest, like, really, actually, I think that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting how framing can really change the way that these, you know, a discourse can go. That's not to say that the people who haven't penetrated your, like, thick skull have framed it wrong. But
thanks, Elizabeth.
Just thought I'd throw you under the bus while we're here. So, no, it's great. And I honestly, I would love to do, you know, I'd love to talk to her more. So,
yeah.
So please come back with me. Anyway, time to get on to our next statement. This is from Shadowkeeper, right?
I think so.
Who was the first person to get in touch after we put our call out. So thank you so much. And let's roll it.
All right.
Hello, I'm Shadowkeeper. I'm mainly a fic reader who writes occasionally. Some of the fandoms I've read for recently include Hannibal, Star Wars, Marvel, and Person of Interest. I've written fic for Sense8, and I also watch a silly amount of K-drama. I absolutely think that there's racism underlying fandom's pairing preferences, fandom referring to the collective whole. Fans will individually have reasons for shipping the way they do, liking specific characters or actors, identifying with them, preferring certain chemistry, or only shipping slash, not head, or vice versa, and the one or two characters of color in that piece of media don't fit any of those criteria. Considering that Western media is mostly made up of white characters, it's not surprising when the majority of fanships are white-only pairings. It's when you start adding up all the uses of those reasons, the problem kind of becomes clear. In individual fandoms, white couples are almost always the most popular, despite non-white leads in canon pairings. Individual fans can be part of the problem when they don't consider themselves racist because they don't think that they hate non-white characters or people. They'll just participate in multiple fandoms or multi-ship within a fandom with prominent non-white characters, and all their favorite ships and all their favorite characters just happen to be all white. Fandom digging up minor white characters to ship and focus on while ignoring leading non-white characters is the clearest display of fandom racism. I know Star Wars led to this discussion with Destination Toast's stats on Kylux, and Star Wars feels like a microcosm of all these issues. There was a meta on Tumblr by a user named Wildhack that brought up the fact that fandom seems to have given Hux a consistent personality in fic, despite his complete lack of screen time or characterization in canon, and that personality being really similar to ones being used in other fandoms with other white dudes that have minimal screen time and character development. I personally got fed up with the Pacific Rim fandom when it became clear that the most popular ship there was Newt Herman, two secondary white dudes who have over triple the amount of fic written about them than a pairing with a non-white lead. And Herman seems to have been given that same personality that Hux has. On a super basic, detached level, fandom attitudes on race make fandom a little less fun because it stifles diversity and homogenizes fandom output, keeps things looking similar. If I want to read fic about non-white characters, chances are that there's just going to be less written about them, so there's less fun stuff to enjoy. Then there's the personal level that keeps you aware of how fandom doesn't really care about or hates non-white characters, the constant barrage of racial microaggressions. Some of it looks similar to fandom misogyny, where characters of color are more frequently overly criticized or hated or ignored compared to white characters. And of course, there's the popular habit of defensive people coming up with all the reasons and excuses for why they hate certain non-white characters and why they won't ship them with anybody. Even when trying to curate fandom experience to cut out the obvious racism, microaggression always makes it through, and it just makes fandom a little less fun, just keeps you reminded of the real world. I've been in fandom for about 19 years at this point, and fandom was racist back then, and it's still pretty racist now. But there's been a little bit of progress. The fact that there are more non-white characters in Western media than there were 10, 20 years ago, especially in the media that fandom latches onto, has helped fandom seem a little less like a monolith of whiteness, where white media is made for white fans. Fans themselves seem way more comfortable identifying themselves as being non-white than a decade or two ago. Also more comfortable speaking up about it. There's a sense that there's a community non-white fans can find support in to call out Hollywood or fandom when they need to. I feel like putting the onus on fans of color to improve fandom racism is like asking people of color to work harder to fix societal racism. Fans of color can speak up and bring attention to the issue, call out racist behavior, but we're not the ones with the power, and we're not the ones Western media is mostly catering to. Half the time, it feels like fans of color are only speaking to each other about the issues, and occasionally get loud enough for white fans to hear us, which, of course, brings defensive white fans and racist trolls flocking in to try and derail the conversation. White fans, as the majority, have the privilege and power to ignore the issue and carry on with the status quo. Things will only improve when white fans recognize that their behavior is contributing to the problem and take steps to improve it. White fans who only have white favorites or white OTPs, who only write fic or make art about white characters, could take a second to question themselves on why that is. What is it about characters of color that don't appeal to them? Or, if they do appeal to them, why are they staying silent about it? I'm not saying that white fans need to make their fandom hobby all about trying to solve racism or other social issues. With the fandom activities they already participate in, white fans try and consider including more characters of color in their fanish focus. If you write or make art and you like a character of color, maybe spend some fandom time focusing on them as well.
Okay, so that was Shadowkeeper, the person who saved us from worrying that no one would respond to our call for people, because she came back to us so quickly and was like, it's okay.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the person who saved us from no one giving prescriptions for what white fans can do.
Because... Well, that's true, too. It's actually really helpful. It makes me feel secure that there's something that I can do.
Having listened to all the statements, Shadowkeeper wins the prize for giving us the most directives, which obviously no one was under any obligation to give us any directives, but that's not to say that we don't appreciate them.
Yes. I respond well to authority.
Instruction. Do you know, can I just say, behind the scenes, I made Flourish a checklist for this episode so we didn't forget any information, and I modeled it on the ones I have at work. And she seems to be responding really well to this, like, very directed space.
It was delightful. If anybody wants to send me a checklist for how not to be a dickbag, I will do that too. So, however, we should probably get our next guest.
Yeah. It's Cleo, right?
Yeah, it's Cleo. So Cleo is Black. She's biracial. And she started off in the Harry Potter fandom before she spent time in American Idol and Star Trek and MCU and Teen Wolf. And these days she's a huge femme slasher on Tumblr. And I've known her since I can't even remember, because I was a sprog, and I really am looking forward to calling her up.
Yes, I'm also looking forward to calling her up. So we should totally do it.
All right. Hey, Cleo.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on.
Sure thing.
So we are so excited to have you on for a lot of reasons, but one of them was we've known each other for a long time in fandom. Yeah. And one of the things that has kept coming up as we've been talking to different people in this episode is the sort of cycles of fandom interest in issues of race and discussions so. About race.
Well, like collect, and, like, you know, not all fans, right? I mean, that's kind of part of the narrative that comes up, because like, I feel like it happens often where it's like, this discussion doesn't go away for plenty of fans, especially people of color. But right. And then everyone else who's like, why is, you know, why are you making us think about this now? And it's like, right. You know what I mean? Like the flashpoints we've been talking a lot about, but in a cyclical way.
Yeah. It's more like, why are you listening to me right now?
Is that
you weren't listening to me like 5 minutes ago, but now there are enough people making enough noise for you to be listening to me. Most of the people who talk about this all of the time. It's part of everything that they say, but it has to get in people's way for them to listen to it in any significant way and decide that something is going on.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I thought of as we were talking about this with different people was how much fanfic you write about women and characters of color and that you've been doing this for so many years. And I remembered you talking about how like, hey guys, always been here.
Yeah. And I remember talking about this with another friend where she was like, I have written femslash, but because slash is always more popular, people only think of you for the slash you've written, even if you've written way less slash. If you have like 3 or 4 really popular slash fics, people just think of you as a slash writer, even though you have those 4 slash fics and then you have like 25 femslash fics. But no one was looking at them, so they kind of don't exist, which is sort of the larger issue, is the way that things that aren't mega popular kind of don't exist. We don't have a middle. We just have things that we decide aren't important and things that everybody must be paying attention to.
That's an interesting distinction.
Do you think that it functions this way for issues of race as well? Like for femslash, no one pays attention to it. And then someone is like, let's make a femslash challenge because everybody's being sexist. Is it the same for race?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that there's right now, especially in Tumblr, I have definitely drifted into something more like a femslash fandom, which femslash is so small that it ends up being its own space. And everybody may be watching this show or that show or into this movie or that movie, but it's sort of this larger kind of multi-fandom femslash space that a lot of people are participating in all at once. So all those people are talking about it all the time and interested in it and reading it and participating in it. And then things bubble up, like, you know, a whole bunch of lesbian ladies on television getting killed in a week and everybody, and then it kind of bubbles up and people talk about it for about 10 minutes and then it kind of descends. And I think the same thing happens with race, where there can be a lot of things, a lot of small things that are just ongoing things and no one's paying attention to. And then something becomes too big to ignore. And then everybody talks about that for a while. And then that issue gets resolved or no one cares about it. Everybody's done talking about it. Everybody's tired of it, which I totally understand. And then it just goes back down because people don't really change. I mean, I think that if there was one thing that I would, that if I were a person who talked about things a lot on social media, I would say it's sort of, there are a lot of people, and I think they're very well-meaning, who will reblog or retweet or link to someone writing understandably frustrated meta about either people writing about women or people writing about characters of color, but then that's all they do. They just reblog the meta. I mean, I know that I will get more attention if I write a really pointed, sarcastic, angry series of paragraphs about race than if I write anything nuanced or thoughtful, or if I write an actual story. Those will not get attention. And in fact, someone I knew who, you know, was not a person of color, and I was saying something about that too, and she said, well, that's not as useful. I'm like, to who? I'm not writing this. I mean, someone had said once, you know, we're not writing these things about race to be useful to other people. We're writing about our experience in the world. And so I'm not writing it so that you'll reblog it and a whole bunch of other people will read it. I'm writing it because I'm just trying to kind of write my truth, or I'm frustrated today or whatever. So seeing that happen over and over, when it's so easy to go find a bunch of fic and coo to it. Like, I'm not even asking people to create fan works that they don't feel super excited about. Just go find some fics and coo to them. Or make a rec list of the fics that you found. Because the reason that people don't create a lot of this work is because it doesn't get as much attention. Mm-hmm. After a while, if you don't have like the ship that you just love eternally, you kind of burn out and you sort of are like, well, why am I doing this? And I think that, you know, mega slash fandom really runs on the idea that you should do things that are in the white hot center of attention, not just because you want attention, but because it's fun to do the thing that everybody is doing. And so there's a thing you're pushing back against always of, I want to do this because I want to do it. And people are like, well, why would you do it if you know only four people who are doing it? That doesn't sound fun, you know, and that you have to push back against that all the time. It's sort of like, am I in fandom if I'm not writing Steve Buckey right now? Does anything that I'm doing in fandom in May matter if I'm not writing Steve Buckey?
Right.
I mean, I spent enough time in and near that kind of big mega slash thing to know that ultimately it's not my thing. Like I was in Trek fandom, and I feel like I still am, but I was a Kirk McCoy person who was watching Kirk Spock happen just from afar, not really in a rival way, because we didn't feel that way about it, but you watch it from afar and the problems, the race problems that it started and the way that whole thing went down. And we were sort of like, I'm glad I'm not over there. And then I ended up, I don't know how this happened, but I ended up in the middle of the whole Steric thing in Teen Wolf. And that got really racially messy in a lot of ways very quickly and became a difficult space to kind of live in. And after I backed out of that space, I sort of moved into fem slash mostly from there. But I've spent enough time in slash fandom to kind of, it's hard because I know that a lot of this started from the Destination Toast stuff. And I've always had a lot of problems with those kinds of fandom metrics. I mean, obviously there's the problem of them only looking at AO3. And I know there's people make all these disclaimers, but we all know that, like, you know, headships usually tend to go off in their own little places and they have their own tiny archives. Pride and Prejudice is not a Yuletide fandom. And that's all happening on its own archive off in the depths of the internet somewhere.
Right.
It's not, you know, and so.
And they're incredibly well organized also.
Super. And so they are all having their party somewhere else. And it's not a place where you can see a lot of other things. It looks small because it's just one fandom. And maybe, and a lot of it is just one ship, but it's enough that, you know, they're not going to be in Yuletide. And I think that when I look at people who are only pulling from AO3, I'm kind of like, that's not great. And I know we can all say, well, we know this isn't all a fandom, but let's look at these numbers anyway. And I have a problem with that, but that's probably just because I was trained as a historian. So I'm like, your sources. And then on top of that, I think my other big problem with that stuff is that we are constantly looking at numbers of stories and we are never looking at numbers of words.
Hmm.
I mean, 100,000 word Finn Poe story just got finished the other day. And it makes me sad that that's just going to be one check mark. And if someone goes and writes a 500 word, any other ship, that's going to be the equivalent.
Sure.
And that doesn't seem quite right to me. But ultimately, I was kind of perusing around what Toast was doing, and someone had said, oh, I'm sad because my ship fell below the number of ships that you were looking at. And I think that people feel erased by that. I think that people feel like, well, if my thing isn't an important enough thing. So when you look at these things, those ships aren't rival ships. They don't, I think, in a large part, really care about each other. But when you have a downturn in the number of stories over a period of 5 months, a downturn that happened like right before a huge exchange for Star Wars Day, by the way, then someone says, why? And I'm just not sure that's a question that needs to be answered. I mean, I think that this all started from like people going, why aren't there? And it's like, well, why do there need to be? Or why is it that we need to have this kind of like this idea that we're, if we have the numbers, then we're the thing that matters. Used to read fandom secrets pretty religiously. And one of the reasons that I did was because in the middle of feeling like there can be one big thing and that's all anybody cares about, it was constantly reminding me of the hundreds of tiny, tiny things that people cared about. And I think that it's really easy for that to get lost. It's obviously easy for that to get lost on something like Tumblr, which tends to really aggregate and exaggerate the popular and lose the unpopular. And it's also easy to have that reaction to, I mean, I think that obviously she's doing statistics in a very value neutral way, but it's kind of like the outcome is always going to get valued in some way.
Sure.
And that's the part that I think is unfortunate.
I think, yeah, I mean, oh, I guess the one disclaimer we have to say, because anyone engaging with Toast is she is a regular on our show and she's a friend of ours. And she, I mean, she's trained in this. She's well aware of the limitations. And I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think the interesting thing about focusing on AO3 is I think for like me, and I'm wondering if it's true for you guys too, there is a value in saying, well, this is what's happening on AO3, so let's interrogate why we're all like that, you know? Because I mean, I'll read in other places, but it's only because that's older stuff. It's hard. One thing that I've been talking about with some people that seems like it comes in line with what you're saying is there's also kind of a privileging of the ship in these like stats discussions, right? You know, where
yes.
It's like,
yes.
I, you know, you read plenty of, I read in ships and I've only had a few ships, but the idea that those are the only two people in your story or your story is only about these two dudes or whatever is kind of a blankety thing that frustrates me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I have always written a lot of ensemble stuff, and it makes me really super anxious when people write those posts of like, here's how to filter effectively on AO3 so that you get stories that are only about the ship you want and don't have any of these other people in it. While I obviously being a femslasher, I totally understand that problem of people putting in the femslash ship as a background ship. And so then you have this femslash tag that supposedly has 130 stories, but really only has 70 because most of them are background. But if I'm going to write a story that has, I really love writing stories that are about a slash ship and a femslash ship interacting. Mm. I just find something really interesting about that. So it makes me kind of tense when I think that people are like, but is this really a slash story? Is it really a femme slash story? And I'm like, it's really an ensemble story. And I don't think there's a space for that.
Yeah.
This is sort of going back in time to something you said a moment ago. Just because we touched on this briefly with some of the other folks we've talked to, could you talk a little bit more about the Star Trek Kirk Spock and Spock Uhura mess? Because I feel like there. Oh no, that's
just
a can of worms.
The hoo boy face you just made.
because I feel like one of the things that has, like, we're talking about how complex, like, slash versus het versus, like, ensemble versus do we just like the characters and want to see them all love each other? It feels like that was way more than even Star Wars now, that was a really complex instance.
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the biggest things that complicated that particular mess was that I think that the television show, the original series, is much more purely, or actually I would say not even the television show. I would say that the original slate of movies were much more purely Kirk Spock than lots of other things were happening. I think a lot of people went into that reboot movie assuming that it would be very Kirk Spock and did not realize how much they were going to take a relationship and make it initially antagonistic and then bring it closer. So they were kind of a little taken aback and disappointed. There were people who felt like the Spock Uhura relationship, they were sort of jarred by it. And I can understand that. I adored it. And it's probably part of why I floated off into Kirk McCoy land. And also then I just adored the way that Kirk and McCoy, who really were friends for that entire movie, they had a great interaction that I really liked. And so we were definitely us Jim and Bones people, kind of sitting off watching this play out. And a good friend of mine at the time, who was very much invested in Spock Uhura, was really dismayed and felt, someone had made a point at the time, and I can't remember the other ships that were their examples, but that it seemed like when people were really like, this slash ship should really be canon and we should have a petition and this is homophobic, that this isn't happening, that the woman who, she refers to them as leftover ladies, that those leftover ladies were almost always women of color, that this did not happen as often. There's that argument that people make often of like, well, if you have a woman, like, why does she need to be in a relationship? And I understand that argument. I'm more kind of romance focused just as a matter of course. So I almost never see it that way. Whether the woman in question is white or non-white, like, I don't care about whether in canon in the new Star Wars films, Rey ends up with some dude or ends up alone, or like all of those possibilities seem cool to me. So I understand that argument, but the problem is the the times at which it gets floated seem to be convenient to people doing other things. Mm. It got really heated, and it was sad because the Spock Uhura people were really excited, and there were lots of things about that ship that were really great and could have been explored, and they felt really kicked by this idea that of the history of Kirk, Spock, and that history should have been honored. And I think that was the tough part of those arguments, was that people were like, but it's the Slash, it's the original Slash, you know? And I'm like, you know, that's not enough of a reason. And also, you can go ship it. No one's stopping you.
That's the thing. They don't cancel each other. Like, just some people can do one thing and some people can do the other. I mean, yeah. I obviously know the ship wars. I wrote an article about ship wars and why they're serious. But, like, you know, just, yeah.
It does seem strange nowadays to have real ship wars over canon in Slash. That seems mm-hmm. really weird. One of the appeals to me of Slash coming out of Harry Potter fandom and that headship war, coming out of that, I really kind of gravitated towards Slash because I did not want to be in the middle of that again. And because I'm not really a canon shipper anyway, I feel like canon is a story someone else is writing, and they can go write it, and mm-hmm. that's cool. And whatever, and maybe I won't like it, and maybe I will, but there's nothing I can really do about it except refuse to continue to consume it. That's all of it. And so I am not intensely, even in the middle of Harry Potter fandom, when people were fighting over who was going to be with Hermione, I had a ship that I loved, and then I had the ship that I thought was going to happen in the books, and they weren't the same thing, and I didn't think they had to be. But I saw that happen with Star Trek. I saw that happen again with Teen Wolf. And I think the interesting thing that happened to Teen Wolf, though, was that a lot of people who had thought that the big Slash ship that would come out of that fandom would be Scott and Stiles. And obviously, it has drifted more in that direction now, especially since Derek's on the show. And Derek and Stiles didn't have a lot of interactions toward the last couple of seasons that Derek was on the show. But part of their argument was, why can't we ditch Allison? We've ditched so many other ladies. And it's like, it's going to get harder to ditch those ladies when they become better characters. Mm. Allison was a great character, and people really liked her on-screen romance with Scott, and so people kind of left it alone. It was sort of like the way that Harry Draco people just kind of left Ron and Hermione alone and went off, because they were like, oh, that's cute. I'm going to go Slash these other people. That's and me. I feel like that was the thing that happened. And as we get the better female characters that we've been yelling about, I think that this idea that you can just ditch all these ladies is going to become harder. I really think I'm looking on the horizon at the media that's being created. And once we get past, you know, Steve Bucky, and I mean, you know, I'm not even going to start talking about hockey because I will say things that I won't be able to take back. But once we move away from that, I don't see another juggernaut on the horizon. That kind of media doesn't seem to be getting, you know, movies are moving away from bromance and just letting the guys have sex. And then you have a lot more kind of ladies floating around in movies who are actually there to do a thing and are interesting. So I don't know. I think that the idea of Slash is going to become more complicated as we have all of these things happen.
Sure.
And the race thing is going to be equally sort of like, where are we going to find all of these white guys to Slash?
Well, that's true.
Clearly in space Nazi uniforms.
Yes. So we were talking to Rukmini Pandey. This ties in really nicely because one thing she was saying about Finn as a character from Star Wars is, you know, he is a black character and he's the lead and he is unavoidable. And, you know, if I were to think about the MCU, which I am right here with you. I mean, nothing against the Steve Bucky people or any of them, but just like, all right, guys, like my friend says to me, why don't you ship Steve Sam? And I'm like, well, you know, like I think Sam's an awesome character, but like he's like this fun sidekick guy to me, right? And you could say, oh, well, people of color aren't being given these starring roles and I need like a tortured man baby to be in my ship or whatever. And they're not often cast in those roles. And Finn is the lead of the biggest movie. You know what I mean? So he makes it. So do you see, it sounds like that's what.
And he's kind of a tortured man baby in that he like.
I loved it. Yes.
Stormtrooper. Like,
right.
Go on. Yeah. Right. Like.
But I think that the people who talk about, like, Finn Poe being a cinnamon roll ship have a point, just because I think that one of the things that a lot of people, like people in fandom and critics as well, pointed out about Finn and Poe, and especially their interaction, is that it was very joyous. They're in a super tense situation. They immediately kind of bonded in a very positive way. And then in the ship, they cheer each other on. And when they see each other again, they're just purely happy to see each other. And even sort of that moment when Finn looks up and is like, oh, that's the best pilot or whatever. He's just really, they just make each other very happy. And it's a very uncomplicated kind of relationship. And there isn't a lot. I mean, you can put angst in it. They're both have suffered a lot of trauma. And so there's a lot of stuff, and they have a war that they have to go fight now. I mean, there's a lot of things, but their general attitude toward the world is very like, a whole bunch of terrible things have happened, but the way I'm going to get through it is by keeping my attitude up and just pushing through the next thing and the next thing and the next thing until it's over. And that doesn't lend itself to a lot of like Sturm und Drang kind of stuff. I will say though, just as a disclaimer, I am a Sam Bucky shipper, because I find their interaction to be hilarious. But
I feel like, you know. All right, maybe Finn isn't the, I mean, there's people, so one thing that we learned in this process is that the number one tag in the Kylux ship on AO3 is fluff, and half of it's like coffee shop AUs. So it's like, who's to say what people quote unquote want in their fic? I think people want everything, but it just seems like with more of, you know, if it's not like 17 white dudes and one woman and one black man, if it's not going to be that anymore, then people are going to have, you know, people, there's going to be a lot more to engage with, right? It sounds like that's what you're saying in general.
I mean, I would hope so. I think that there's in the meantime going to be this kind of stuff where people kind of try to find the one place to go. I mean, that would be the politically incorrect thing I would say about hockey fandom, is that I don't think it's a coincidence that at the moment that race and gender in fandom became a thing that people seriously started talking about, that a sport that is, and look, I'm from Maine, I went to a hockey college, I love hockey, but that sport is hella white. And people don't really talk that. And, you know, there's some femflash going on with those professional ladies, but that's not where the action is.
Right.
So I can't think that it's a coincidence that a whole bunch of people went off to a space where it's not an issue. Mm. And then they tripped into a bunch of other issues, but, you know, they didn't have to worry about that issue. And I don't think that's a coincidence.
That's interesting. So, like, yeah, where is the, like, NFL fandom in this regard?
Or NBA.
Yeah.
Or baseball, or even tennis.
We can name all sorts of sports that are very diverse. Do you think I should try to, I'm a football fan. Do you think I should try to get the like football RPF fandom?
Yes.
Flourish?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It'll be really sad because my team lost the Super Bowl 4 years in a row. So that'll be a lot of hurt comfort because they all felt the shame.
Hurt comfort.
Yeah.
Fine. Oh my God. That's all I want from you. Write me. Yeah. Write me this fanfic, Elizabeth.
Okay, it has been such a pleasure to get to talk to you, Cleo. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for asking.
All right, that was an awesome conversation with Cleo. What the listener doesn't know is Flourish had to hang up immediately afterwards, and then Cleo and I called each other back and talked for another hour. So we're best friends now. Cleo probably doesn't think so, but...
But you're going to be standing outside of her door like, "Hi, Cleo," creepily.
You just did a cat scratch gesture, so that's accurate.
Good.
Good. This is a stalking podcast now. That's fine.
Okay.
So we have one more prepared statement, and this is PJ, or 9 Moons 42. So we should roll a tape.
Let's do it.
Hi there. My name is PJ, or you can call me 9 Moons. I am currently in the Marvel Cinematic Universe Captain America fandom, and I am also in the Star Wars The Force Awakens fandom. I write fanfic for Stucky and for Jedi Storm Pilot. Maybe a little background about me first. I'm from the Philippines, which is a country that got colonized by both Spain and the United States, and then there was Japan too for a while. So when you look at the media here in my part of the world, they usually say that it's white characters or characters who can pass for white who are the heroes. They're the ones who are promoted, and of course that means that we enjoy a lot of Western media. Thing is, we can't actually see ourselves in those stories. Even if we try to look for them, it's really hard to think of a hero or heroine of a Filipino descent. And people always say, yeah, you're just Asian Americans, or you're not even Asian because you can speak English, because you look like you're pretty much at home in the Western media. It's not like you're really not going to acknowledge that we're from Southeast Asia, if ever. And that was brought home to me in one of my previous fandoms, which was Dragon Age Inquisition. I had the opportunity to write an original character, an Inquisitor, who looked much like me. And it was a little okay. I guess I didn't really reach a lot of people, but those of my fellow writers who were insistent on writing African-American Inquisitors or African-American original characters, they really got the brunt of the negative commentary. Like, a lot of people were saying, people like you don't belong in that setting. And so you mean to tell us that dragons belong in a setting like that, but not African Americans, not Asian Americans, not Inquisitors who might be from India or from Korea or something like this? It kind of doesn't really make sense when you think about it. But that really was the major underlying tension that we saw. Briefly as well, I was in on the ground floor in Inception fandom. I stayed there for a while, and it was very strange to note that there were a lot of people who would write stories for, you know, Arthur and Eames and Cobb and Ariadne, but very, very little fic for Saito and for Yusuf, who were just as integral to the story as the others. And I could never really understand why those characters were of less import when they were just as much an integral part of the team as the others. I take note, I've been doing the fandom thing for about 20 years, and I'm still fighting against the idea of we are only tokens, we are only plot devices. And I was all over the place when the news of the Ghost in the Shell recast came out. I'm still very angry about that. That's not a story for people who are not integrally Japanese. That is fundamentally a Japanese story that needs to be told in the right way. And they're not going to do that, not in Hollywood. That's it for me, and I'm glad to have had the chance to join this particular part of the Fansplaining podcast. Thanks, guys. Bye.
So that was PJ, one of the five guests that you have just heard, but they are not all of the guests. So we should keep our goodbyes short because we're going to be back tomorrow with five more guests, all of whom have much to say on this topic.
You know, one of whom isn't from fanfiction fandom. Can you believe it?
Isn't it shocking?
This will be one of the first people we've ever had on the show who's not from fanfiction fandom. That's fine. Yeah, so as stated earlier, if you're listening to this when it comes out, that'll be tomorrow, Thursday, May 19th. If you're listening to it anytime after that day, go ahead. You just click right to the next one, and you will get another five voices, another five perspectives on race and fandom.
Yeah, and if you're looking forward to those voices, that's going to be Roz, Jeffrey Lyles, a.k.a. Lyles Movie Files, Tracy, Canada, Zena, also known as the proprietor of Stitch Media Mix, and Zvi. So we are really looking forward to having all of them on next time, which will be a shorter next time than usual.
Our shortest next time ever.
All right. I will talk to you, I guess, tomorrow, Elizabeth.
Quote unquote tomorrow.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are not those of Stratus Media Ventures, Chimera Media Group, Chaotic Good, or our clients, or our employers, or anyone's except our own.